Welcome to Life Solved, the research podcast from the University of Portsmouth, where we explore how studies here are changing our world today and in the future. I'm Robin Montague, a writer at the university. Water is our most precious resource. It underpins all aspects of life. But despite this, experts warn many of us around the world could be faced with the prospect of running out of fresh water.
So there's only actually a really small fraction of water on planet Earth that's drinkable.
To mark World Water Day, in this episode we'll be speaking to researchers from the University of Portsmouth to find out what's being done to help shift water habits, both here and further afield, to ensure a more sustainable future for everyone. Our water supply affects everything, from what we drink and eat, through to our ability to respond to wildfires, which devastated large parts of Europe last year. In reality, the world won't run out of water. The amount of water the world has is the same amount we've always had. But what could happen is we run out of usable water, or at the very least, see it drop to very low reserves.
This whole issue and topic of water scarcity and water insecurity is something that I think is growing in importance, and yet we're somehow often quite oblivious about it.
That's Dr. Julia Brown, an Associate Professor in Sustainable Environmental Management here at the University of Portsmouth. You might recognise her if you've been one of our regular listeners from the start of Life Solved. She appeared on an episode in 2020 looking at the politics of water.
What I wanted to get across in that initial podcast was just to get people aware about the issue of water and water scarcity, because it's a resource that we take for granted. We're recording this on a very wet day here in Portsmouth, but water is one of those topics that we don't always appreciate. When we think about World Water Day, that I know this podcast is relating to, we always have images of people in other parts of the world maybe carrying jerry cans on their heads, and we don't always relate water scarcity as an issue that's a global issue and is increasingly going to affect us here in the UK. We always talk about the blue planet, don't we? And 70% of Earth is water, but actually most of that is seawater. So when we're thinking about water and fresh water that we can drink, it's relatively scarce. So of the 3%, a lot of that is locked in polar ice caps, for example, or underground that we can't readily access. So there's only actually a really small fraction of water on planet Earth that's drinkable. So estimates vary between 0.3 and 0.5%. And the bit that's important is that water supply is relatively fixed, but demand is growing.
An increase in extreme weather events, like drought and rainfall, and growing demand on our water supplies can have devastating effects on our access to fresh water and our livelihoods. Over one in four people live in countries affected by water scarcity. 7 years ago, Cape Town, the capital city of South Africa, suffered a severe drought and planned to cut off its water supply. This drastic measure left 4 million people without access to water beyond a rationing system.
South Africa is a really water-scarce country. I did my PhD research in South Africa, so I know it well. And I have friends who live in Cape Town, and they're telling me about how they have to be really strict about their water use. There isn't actually any water in the pipe system, so you have to be very, very careful and very, very mindful. And I think in situations where you don't have frequently running taps, you suddenly appreciate it more and you're more careful of it. Imagine when you go camping and you have to suddenly carry your own water. It's heavy. I think we just take for granted that water is there, and when it's not, suddenly we have to change our behaviours. Cities like Barcelona, increasingly water scarce in southern Spain as well. So it may be a future that many more of us have to experience, and that's something that we're really keen to think about. How can we prepare people for a future where we need to be more mindful of water when we're used to being in a context where we think water is limitless?
Referred to as Day Zero, Cape Town was the first major city in the world to suffer this phenomenon. But it is becoming more and more likely across the rest of the world, including here in the UK.
Climate is changing. I think it's estimated by 2080, the summers here in the UK will be 5 degrees higher. If we do reduce our CO2 emissions, we can maybe lower that to a 3 degree higher during the summer months, and that will have an impact on the amount of water that's available in reservoirs, and it will impact if we don't recharge our aquifers during the winter months. We are heading for a future where we will have to be a lot more mindful. Do I think that we'll be queuing in the streets for water? It may be in summer months we will have much wider hosepipe bans, and you know, I think we are going to be more aware of it like other people are in Cape Town or Barcelona. But I think there are other countries in the world that will have a much more immediate impact just because of their geography and the fact that they have physical water scarcity.
And we live right by the ocean, mm-hmm. So it wouldn't be, you know, a stretch to say a lot of people probably assume that's where we get our water from, which isn't the case.
Not at all. I think most people are pretty clueless about where water comes from. We turn our taps on and water comes out. So yes, we live by the sea. In some countries they do take water. So in Saudi Arabia they take salt water, seawater, and they take the salt out of it. That's desalinization, but that uses a vast amount of electricity. And in countries like Saudi Arabia, they're using fossil fuels for that electricity. So it's not without consequence. So yes, there is some potential for desalinization, but I think it's important to note that supplies globally are relatively fixed in supply. And it's the question of what's important is how demand has grown. Portsmouth is, I think, the second most densely populated part of the country outside of London. So yeah, we are very densely populated. Where we get our water from is from groundwater systems, and there's concerns that we're over-abstracting from those groundwater systems. So if you are in areas with high populations and kind of the water situation, you know, has limits on it, then you are going to get into situations where we need to look at how much water people are using.
But it's not just about the geography of water supplies globally. Julia says the distribution of money also plays a significant role in people's access to drinking water.
There is probably enough water at the moment for everybody. I think there's around 7 billion people in the world, and if it was evenly split, that would amount to 7.5 million gallons across somebody's lifetime. But the thing that's really important, and I think I'd really like to stress this, that a really nice quote from Robert Kennedy, the younger brother of JFK, and he said, "Water no longer flows downhill, it flows towards money." And I think what's really important is to think about the association between water, money and power. And that's why it's important to understand that water is unevenly distributed in terms of who can afford to have access to that water. Except for very, very, very unique situations, rich people will always have access to water. And often it's to do with whether people can afford connection fees to supply. And in many countries, the water is privatised and it's multinational companies who are supplying water. But there's also a concept known as economic water scarcity. So there may be water available, but people don't have the economic resources to get that water. That can be because that water is groundwater and you need to have the resources to construct wells and pumps to abstract that water. And if you don't have the money or the resources or the engineering, there may be water underground, but you can't literally tap into it. So that's why I think it's important to think about both physical water scarcity and economic water scarcity, and it is unevenly distributed.
So while you can't change the geography of where you live or increase how much money is being pumped into water systems, unless you decide to pack up and move, there are other ways to help turn the tide of the growing water crisis that are much closer to home.
We've got this obsession with washing. It's like with our clothing as well, isn't it? We wear, I mean, my husband, oh my goodness, the amount of washing that man creates. It's unbelievable. And I think it's this sort of, we're just a bit overly obsessed with hygiene and cleanliness. I don't mean that people shouldn't wash, but you can do that, you said, in 2 minutes, but people are spending 20 minutes, 30 minutes in a shower, gobbling up vast volumes of water and creating vast volumes of wastewater as well. And I think there's often misconceptions that having a bath is somehow bad and a shower is good. It all comes down to how deep your bath is and how long your shower is. Working from home as well, I think one of the reasons why water consumption has increased is because people are working from home. Maybe you can feel like you have more time to shower every day because you don't have to do a commute or things like that. So all of this is wrapped up with it.
It just comes down to education, really, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think it needs to start earlier, though, the education about this thing?
Yeah, I've got friends who are school teachers, and I was asking them, when do you start teaching about hygiene? And they were saying it's year five. And I think it's really fascinating as well how bath time becomes part of the ritual when you have babies. And it's like every time it's night time, it's bath time. And so you're kind of introducing water as that soothing ritual. And then by the time you've got, you know, kids that are teenagers, they are in the shower constantly.
I remember that campaign about the brushing your teeth and not having the tap running when you're brushing your teeth, and that was a game changer, because when I was younger, that wasn't something I thought about. I just had the tap running because I thought water was in abundance. But it is those sort of campaign marketing messages, isn't it, as well?
Completely. And I think often if I watch influencers and they're kind of, I don't know, get ready with me kind of thing, or I think Vogue magazine do these get ready with me, and or, you know, Harper's Bazaar, and you watch people brushing their teeth and I'm always wincing because the tap is left running, or they're washing their face in showing off whichever cleanser they use and they're leaving the tap running. And I think an influencer does have influence, and I'm not always sure that they're thinking, oh, actually I could be helping an issue by leading by example. So I think that's what we're really interested in exploring, is the power of communication and messaging and how to target particular groups with particular kinds of messages.
Hello, I'm Professor Joy Watts from the University of Portsmouth, Faculty of Science and Health. This episode of Life Solved is a great starting point for a journey into our diverse, life-changing research. We explore everything from the evolution of life to the causes of environmental crises. And we often work in partnership with major organisations to enable innovation in sectors ranging from healthcare to elite sports. If this podcast has you feeling inspired, you can find out how to support our research, collaborate or study with us at port.ac.uk/lifesolved.
Here in the UK, 70% of our water supply comes from surface water, which means that the water we use in our daily lives is taken directly from fresh water sources in nature, as Julia has been explaining. Reducing our household water footprint is a great way to make an impact as an individual, but there's been no shortage of stories in the news about what more the government and water companies could be doing.
Something they're really trying to tackle with trust and consumer trust within these big water companies. When you've got Panorama episodes looking at sewerage spills and negligence and people losing water and bills going up, it's then hard to say, actually, can you use a little bit less and can you change your behaviours to help us out?
That's Rebecca Gale, Head of Sustainability at an independent consultancy firm called WaterScan, which helps businesses reduce their water consumption and reduce their environmental footprint. In a moment, Rebecca will use the term ESG program. This is what's used to measure a company's environment, social and governance impact.
We've always had great relationships with companies who have really great ESG programs in place. So companies like Sainsbury's and Whitbread, for example. The Sainsbury's have a target for all their stores to be water neutral, and Whitbread are going to reduce their consumption in bedrooms by 20% per sleeper. So quite strong commitments.
Rebecca's passion for tackling water waste has inspired her to take a PhD at the University of Portsmouth. She's going to be working alongside Dr. Julia Brown.
As Rebecca was saying, there are a lot of image problems for the water sector. That could be a problem that we have to address going forward. But ultimately, one of the things I found fascinating about starting to investigate what's happening on my doorstep, because normally I've done research overseas, and during lockdown, I realised, oh, there's some interesting things happening here. The university have signed a memorandum of understanding with Portsmouth Water. And I didn't realise that we use more water in this area, in Portsmouth Water's area, than anywhere else in the UK. So there's also something specific that's happening in this part of the country as well. So there's a lot that needs to be done just to raise water literacy, to raise awareness, and I think to kind of separate the problem out from wastewater and also fresh water supplies, but to see how the two are also connected.
So we're looking at student halls and the student body, which is a hard to reach kind of demographic for Portsmouth Water. Students that have moved into the area, that move round, that have landlords that don't pay for their bills. The messaging's harder to get to that area. And as Julia said, Portsmouth Water, I think it's about 20 litres a day in addition to the national average that's used in the area. And the government have a target of reduction of 20% on per capita usage by 2038. So we're looking at levels of water literacy, motivations for reducing water, packaged up under some like a behaviour change communications project to try and get them to reduce the water they use in the halls.
So I should also add, this is a project that's being funded by Portsmouth Water, and really excited to be working with Rebecca, who brings a whole wealth of experience on water efficiency savings. But when we were developing this project, we were sort of talking to our students about, you know, showering habits and water use, and they were admitting that they're taking showers of half an hour, 40 minutes. And this is partly because they're in halls where it's combined bills. They haven't got parents banging on the door saying, get out the shower. You know, you are independent. And if you want to target interventions, you need to know what is the state of play now. What do people understand? You know, when we talk about, you know, how many litres of water, it's quite hard to relate to that, isn't it, sometimes? So maybe we need to think about ways that we can communicate water use in a way that's more meaningful for different kinds of people.
Amazing. And that's one project that you're working on, but you've also just been signed off for another one.
Yes. So this is, it's really nice that we're, in a sense, able to match fund. So Portsmouth Water funding this project that Rebecca's working on, which is about student halls and student water consumption. And the university is now funding a full bursary PhD, and we've just awarded this to a fantastic Moroccan student called Touria Gadbar, and she's also finishing off her master's project, which is looking at water use amongst students in her university in Morocco. So her findings will greatly support and help Rebecca's project. Often my work has been overseas, and it's so nice to actually do work that hopefully can make a local difference and help the local water company, but also to help the environment, because I didn't know this either, but we have some of the rarest habitats in the world here, these chalk stream aquifers. There's only 200 in the world, and 85% of them are based in the south of England. So these are some of the rarest habitats, and our abstraction of water is beginning to impact those habitats. So that motivation for trying to help our local environment and be more engaged with our local environment is certainly something that's motivating me.
It's great to hear that a local water supplier is working collaboratively with academic and industry experts in an effort to spread awareness and support its community. Is this something we should expect to see more of as water reserves are stretched thin? Here's Rebecca.
Yeah, I think the industry's really taken a turn in that respect. There's lots of incentives going on. There's Ofwat funded projects and innovation. It's quite an exciting space to be in at the moment. In the non-household market, there's a government target set by DEFRA for a 9% reduction in consumption by 2038. And then, as I said, that's supported by Ofwat funds. So Ofwat's the government regulator. So they've got a series of funds that support innovation within the sector.
And then there's the role of technology, as Julia explains.
Portsmouth Water customers use more water than any other part of the country, around 20 litres per day per person more. And that's also, I think, partly related to the fact that we have the lowest water metering level in the country.
The industry is looking at smart meter rollouts as well. So it's kind of one step above a dumb meter, essentially a dumb meter. You have to go out and visually read it. So they're looking at smart meters, which are kind of, is an automated read system. So you get more intelligence on where and when water is being used across the network.
It will also identify leaks as well. But I think what's also important is that we've mentioned that Portsmouth Water customers are using more water, and we can install smart meters that will reduce consumption, but it's still not going to be enough to bring it down to their target. So Portsmouth Water has set a target of 119 litres per day per person by 2050. We're currently using around 160, just over 160 litres per day per person. So the meter will bring things down some, but then we've got this gap. And it's a heavily regulated sector because water is vital for life. So in any other field, you would simply put the price up. If you want to reduce demand for something, the government can instruct water companies the range that they can make their increases, but they can't sort of increase bills by 200%, 3,000,000% or whatever. So there's actually a limit as to what you can do in terms of pricing. So that's why we're really interested in behaviour change. And I think what's also interesting is I've read other studies where water companies have offered people water saving devices. There's actually a very low uptake of these devices, A, because people don't necessarily want people traipsing around their house putting the technology in, for example, even if it's really low technology. So there's an image problem as well, which Rebecca was talking about earlier, is how can we encourage people to use water-saving devices and technologies, even if they're freely available? That's something we do have to overcome.
How likely is it that if we continue on the trajectory that we are with how much water consumption and population growth, that we may run out of clean drinking water?
Each 5 years, the water companies do water resource management plans. And that's at least a 25-year projection on their water resources. So if you look at that nationally, there's a projected estimated supply-demand deficit of 4,225 million litres a day by 2050.
I suppose it's about time people get a little bit scared, though.
you can scare people, but sometimes scaring people switch off. So one of the things we're interested in this project is using positive marketing communication. So informed by nudge theory, which is very much about the natural herding instinct. So let's get people to be positive and move in a positive direction. I'm aware of the situation, but try and be optimistic and positive and hope that we can bring people along with us. During COVID, it was interesting that you'd see these posters about getting particular groups, like say young males, to get vaccinated. And there's some really lovely posters that say there's a group of really cool looking young guys and they're saying, we've been vaccinated, it's okay. And it was that idea of come and join us, because I'm looking at them thinking, I want to be like them. I think that positive approach, rather than beating people with negative messages, can be more productive. But we don't know. We need to test this.
Everything we do requires water. From drinking, washing, growing food, to industry, construction, and manufacturing. With more than 7.8 billion people on the planet, and the population projected to top 10 billion by 2050, the situation is set to grow more urgent. As we've heard from Julie and Rebecca today, it's an issue that will inevitably affect all of us, so it's time to start taking it seriously.
When we think about water scarcity, we always imagine it's happening elsewhere, and I think it's recognising that this is a future that's going to happen everywhere, and it's going to happen here.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Life Solved. You're very welcome to be part of the discussion. Email us at lifesolved@port.ac.uk. That's lifesolved, one word, @port.ac.uk. Tell us what you think and make suggestions for future episodes of Life Solved. And we'd love if you clicked follow on your podcast app so you never miss an edition. We would really appreciate it if you left a rating or review as well. It helps us get those conversations into more ears around the globe. If you've been inspired by this episode and want to support our work, including the research partnership with Portsmouth Water, then head to port.ac.uk/lifesolve to find out how. You can also find out how to work or study with us. Bye for now.